Welcome to the latest episode of the People Will Talk podcast. Joining me here is Maria. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
I'm great, thank you. And special guest, Wayne Kyo. How are you, Wayne?
Hi, I'm very well, thank you.
So it's great having you here, Wayne. We met in very surreptitious circumstances. We were having a book launch in the Secret Kingdoms, and you wandered in and we got to talking. And it's great to have another creative Irish person in the city, which begs the question, Wayne, why did you move to the Spanish capital?
Well, a few different reasons. I mean, some of them are quite prosaic. I mean, my partner got a job here, so that kind of necessitated us moving. And I work freelance, so I can kind of work from anywhere. But I mean, we'd been living in Barcelona, or just outside Barcelona, for a few years. And we'd then done some traveling. We'd gone abroad, done some traveling, and we were returning. And we had this list of places, possibilities that of places we'd like to live. And one of the places that I always had a keen interest in spending some time was in Madrid, because, I mean, there's different reasons, I suppose. The fact, like, I'd lived 11 years in London, so I got quite used to big cities where there's lots going on culturally, lots of events, and, you know, there's never really a moment where there's nothing to do, you know, in London. And I suppose I was looking for something similar. I think the place most similar to that in Spain is probably Madrid. You know, you have like, obviously the really big museums and but then you also have these smaller galleries. It seems to be quite full in terms of culture and music and things like that. So yeah, that's probably a big draw here. And I suppose the other thing as well is just in terms of history, you know, I mean, it's kind of the safe deposit box for so much Spanish history, or it seems to be, you know. So I mean, in Latin America it was interesting because you go to these different places, and there was always this kind of reference, this kind of colonial reference back, you know, everything seemed to kind of flow from Madrid out to these different places in Latin America. So having just kind of come back from there, it was sort of interesting to kind of go to the heart of where all that sort of emanates from, you know. So that's been very interesting for me, and I'm really interested in history, so Madrid is a perfect place for that.
I'm very happy to hear your interest in history, because obviously we have a huge interest in history in general, and particularly the Irish people here in Spain. But yeah. Well, you mentioned Latin America, but you've traveled, I believe, quite extensively. So do you have like a favorite memory, or, you know, of a moment when you were traveling, or something you particularly liked before you came here to Madrid, or even here in Madrid or in Barcelona?
I mean, I was quite a late starter when it came to traveling. So I completed my degree before I'd even left Ireland. So I was like 22, and the first trip I did abroad was going to Italy. And, you know, I think that was really interesting for me. I mean, suddenly, after 22 years of being in the same culture with the same kind of people, like going, Italy felt incredibly exotic, you know, in a way that it's kind of impossible to be nowadays, because everybody can travel so easily, and people become, you know, we become familiar so early, I suppose, with other countries, at least in Europe. But at that time for me, it was incredibly interesting, just everything about it, you know, the how the people are, on the streets, and how people speak to each other, and you know, and like in Spain as well, the idea of the kissing on both cheeks to say hello, these things were so they seemed so exotic and foreign to me at the time, and then the buildings were so different. The fact that you can be just like wandering through any little kind of corner of a city and come across a massive Baroque church just sitting there kind of incongruously, that was something that was really, really different. And I think it kind of stayed with me, that sense of awe, also the food, the smells. I mean, I've heard other people comment on this. I remember the first time I went to Barcelona, and, in the summer, things can get pretty smelly, and even those things that objectively are quite negative things, but it's all wrapped up in this sense of difference, or it's quite these kind of evocative memories, and that really stayed with me then, and that's something that's I'm always trying to kind of go back to try and find that feeling. Whenever I travel, and then another big thing for me was going to I traveled a bit in Iran and Jordan, and to a lesser extent in Turkey, and again that was really interesting because I suppose it's especially with some place like Iran, you hear so much about it that's quite negative often, and everything I'd heard about Iran was through the prism of politics and news and going there was like incredibly interesting, that it's kind of getting a handle on the fact that it's a civilization with like an unbelievably long prestigious history. So much learning comes from there, and so much beauty, so much art and architecture. And it's just not, you don't hear about that when you hear about spoken in TV. And just the people as well. I mean, people are incredibly friendly. There's this pride, I think, in especially in Iran, I noticed that it's not a nationalist pride. It's not like people wanting you to see how great they are. It's more just a kind of a pride in just kind of conviviality, or that sense of openness and welcoming, which is nice. It's something maybe we've lost a little bit in Europe, and it comes in spite of the situation there, not because of it, so people, regardless of what the political situation is there, people are getting on and just being friendly and welcoming, and that was really, really interesting for me.
Iran's an interesting one, because you might remember, Wayne, in 2001, Ireland played a playoff in Iran to get to the World Cup, and it was really funny, because I remember from the time, there was lots of football fans with their beer bellies and their Irish tops, and going over to Iran, and they spoke very well of the country as well, but I think the locals were very entranced, for lack of a better word, by these strange creatures who were, typical beer-swilling football fans. The kissing thing is really funny as well, because we have a friend of the podcast who's been on once or twice, and he tried to do the kissing thing in Ireland, and people just rejected it completely, just to say hello. But speaking of traveling, and the fact that you are Irish, I'm always curious, and finding these points of connection with Ireland when I'm abroad. Did you find any similarities with Ireland while you're on your far-flung travels?
Similarities. I think occasionally there are these kind of superficial similarities that I notice. Like in terms of landscape, maybe. For example, a long time ago now, about 10 or 12 years ago, I went to Cap de Creus in Catalonia, and with a Catalan friend of mine, and it was like interesting. It was like a really cloudy day, you know. We were on the Mediterranean, and you know, but everything was quite grey, and you know, the way the coast looks there, the cliffs and the rocks, you know, it looks in that kind of light. It could be kind of anywhere on the coast of Ireland, like particularly probably the west coast, I suppose. But I remember commenting, it's like, this just looks like this could be, you know, Kerry, you know, that kind of sense. And that happens occasionally, but it's quite superficial. I don't know if I really get that sense of places being similar to Ireland. I mean, Ireland, you know, for me, it's because it's home, it's everything about it is wrapped up in kind of feel and an atmosphere, you know, and I don't know, it's I don't think that can replicate, because when I'm abroad, I'm just not going to get that kind of sense, that, you know, that kind of essence, or I don't know what it is, that kind of presence. I'm not really sure. I don't really feel that really usually. It's a very separate thing.
That's quite interesting what you said about the feel, because I think some people have been on the podcast have said, oh, when they came to Spain, they felt like home. And I'm always very curious about that, you know, about people that get that feeling like elsewhere. It's not something like I've experienced like person, you know. But there was another interesting thing, I think, which was that you mentioned about the Iranian hospitality, and we're talking now about similarities, but in Spain, for example, Irish people have the reputation of being, you know, friendly and you know, welcoming, so that's another maybe connection there. So different perspectives. So we all see everybody else like maybe, you know, very welcoming, and
I think in terms of people, I do find a lot of similarities between Irish people and Spanish people, and it's I've often thought about this, and it's something, you know, it's definitely rooted in some sort of fact, because I don't get the sense of it with other nationalities. I find it very easy to relate to Spanish people. I don't know, there's something, it's something in this, how people are socially, we have a certain way of communicating that's very, for me, is very familiar. And yeah, I don't know, it's a kind of, it's a sort of an ease, you know, that I don't get this sense of, you know, kind of inner calculation when people are speaking, you know, it's very kind of off the cuff sort of flowing conversation. And it's something I often notice that with people from Spain, I think in Ireland it's quite similar. And, you know, it's very different to other countries, like in Britain, it's a very different way how people speak to each other. It's not less friendly, it's just different, you know. It's hard to put a finger on it, but it feels more careful, I think, maybe. And not just UK, I've noticed that in lots of countries, you know, but in Spain and Ireland, there's this kind of free flowing quality to conversation that for me is very, very familiar.
Well, that's nice. And so presumably you don't miss that, because that's something that you find is quite similar. But are there other things that you miss about Ireland?
Things that I miss. I suppose, I don't know. I mean, I miss things. I noticed that I miss things a little bit about Ireland in more in the winter time. You know, I think Ireland doesn't really work very well in the summer. So I don't really miss it in the summer, because, you know, Ireland in the summer, we're, you know, even if we get a few days of fine weather, we're only just waiting for it to end. And, you know, you can never really kind of settle down to be, to, you know, to say, okay, here's the summer, let's enjoy it. But I think we do the winter really well in Ireland, you know. So I suppose things that I miss would be more like, you know, when I go home in the autumn or the winter, and like, you know, the smell, whether in towns or the countryside, the smell of like home fires, like coal fires, you kind of get that smell on the air. And I don't know, there's a kind of, Ireland has this in the winter time, is we don't get, you know, we don't get serious stormy winters most of the time, and I think the atmosphere is quite, it can be quite soft or quite gentle or something. I don't know, it's hard to describe, but it, you know, it's very different to Spain, you know. And I suppose I miss that. It's a kind of a sense of the atmosphere or the ambience. The only other thing that I can think of that I miss is, like, I suppose pop culture. Because this is something that I don't think you really get. And you get it to a certain extent in the UK, but it's different. But I suppose that idea of, you know, being able to go into a dark pub when the weather is, you know, it's wet and cold outside, and being able to just sit there with friends or alone and just be, you know, and not being a strange thing to do, you know. Yeah. I think it's quite, you know, it's something that's quite nice. I suppose I miss that, because it's very different. I think the pub experience is quite different to the bar experience. So that you get in most of Europe. But, you know, it's a small thing. It's not something that I pine over either, you know.
Yeah, the Spanish bars are, Spain has a very rich gastronomic culture, but in terms of bar culture, can be very austere, and they're not built for staying for a long time. It's one and done, and you go to the next place. So they're not the most comfortable environments by design. And speaking of design, this is a very awkward segue, but you are a graphic designer as well. So what art styles speak to you the most? And maybe you can tell us a bit about, you know, what you're doing in that field, and, you know, why you were attracted to it in the first place as well.
So I'm a graphic designer, and these days I've kind of found myself working mostly in book design, which is really nice, because, you know, it's I always wanted to go to book design, but never could really. I found it kind of hard to get into it. I kind of found myself always working with kind of agency work, doing like identity design and stuff like that, which I like as well, but I don't know, I always found it less rewarding, and, you know, I'm really enjoying that I now work mostly in book design. How did I get into it? Well, I mean, I got into it by not really knowing what I wanted to do when I left school. And I applied for a graphic design course, not really understanding what it was when I was like 18, you know, filling in the what's it called, the form for university in Ireland. I forget the name, but, you know,
the CAO, no, that's it.
CAO, that's the one. And I remember I filled in like journalism and graphic design. They're the only two things that in any way kind of appealed to me, and I didn't even exactly understand what they would entail, you know. But I got into graphic design in Waterford Institute of Technology. And I think the first year there was like trying to understand what I was actually supposed to be doing. The first year was very kind of hands-on, and it was a lot to do with like getting to grips with like paint and pen drawing and the different ways of sketching and things like that. And it was kind of only towards the end of the first year that I kind of understood what graphic designers sort of, what they do, you know. And I just kind of stuck with it then. And my first job was working in a concert production company in Dublin, doing posters for like concerts and gigs and things like that. And then I did an MA in London, in the LCC in London. And That was really interesting, and it made everything more clear about what it entails, you know, graphic design, and like the kind of the larger intellectual practice of graphic design, you know. And yeah, I've worked in slightly different areas of the field, but book design is what I do mostly now. And it's it's more like book covers and book design, interiors, typography, you know. And they're two very different kind of approaches. Like book cover design, it's a lot like almost like poster design, you know. So with cover design, you're kind of trying to condense a whole book or an idea or a theme down to some like very, very focused composition. So an image and typography, or just typography, and you're trying to like, it's kind of like logo design as well. Like you're trying to build a lot, you're trying to like put a lot into something that's a very, like reduce it down to a very kind of its essence, you know. Whereas book interior design, it's different because it's more, you know, it's kind of like, I suppose it's a little bit like architecture, in that you're kind of designing out systems of how different hierarchies of text will work and interact with each other. And obviously some are more complicated than others. Like designing the interior of a novel can be quite simple, that you just have two columns of text on each spread, one typeface, and it's just kind of flows through, and it's just like looking at the little details, typographic details and things like that. Whereas if you're doing a book that has lots of like different elements in it, then you have to kind of build up a system that will work for all of those different elements. So it might be like pull quotes and like running headers, different levels of information within the main body of the text, and how those kind of are expressed across a spread and across the entire book, you know. So they're two really different modes that you have to think in when you're working in book design. And I forget what else you asked me.
No, that's perfect. And it's really interesting that you have like this focus on books, because obviously that's something that's very close to us as well. You know, and I know you also worked in the Natural History Museum in London. So like, you know, I think you've always had a foot in cultural sectors and environments, which I think it's an amazing place to work in. How was your experience there in this grand institution of culture in one of the great capitals of Europe?
It was amazing, really, you know. Basically, I had been abroad traveling a little bit, and I was a little bit fed up with what I was doing in terms of design work and things like that. And I realized that I loved museums, you know, and I kind of made a promise to myself that when I got back and got back down to work, I would try and move into that field to just get some experience in it, you know. And amazingly, it actually happened. So when I got back, I was a couple of months kind of like, you know, looking around for something to do in terms of work, and job came up there. And the museum is, you know, it's like a big, well-loved institution in the UK. It's one of these iconic buildings, you know, in London. But, you know, it is an institution, so it's quite, you know, decision-making is quite slow and ponderous, and there are a lot of people involved in every single decision, no matter how big or small. And, you know, so that sometimes that can be a little bit frustrating, but you can also understand why, because, you know, there's a lot to consider when doing anything in the museum. And design is like just one quite small concern when you step back. I mean, the museum, it's incredible because, you know, it has a huge breadth of expertise inside. So, you know, they have everything. Like they have cabinet makers, carpenters, all of this is in-house. They've got like workshops that are just like, just for carpentry and just for construction and building, you know, for exhibitions and for, you know, all sorts of things. Lighting specialists, then conservators that, you know, look after the after the objects in the museum, in the collections, curators, they have a publishing department, they have educators. So it's, you know, there's just so many people from different backgrounds, but all experts. And, you know, it's really nice there that you get a sense that everybody is kind of working, you know, with a focus on you know, what's best for the museum, which is really, really nice. The other thing is like their collection. So, you know, I got to see on occasionally some of their collections that are, a lot of it is in storage because it, you know, it's just so huge and it just couldn't possibly all be on display, you know. But they've got collections that were collected by Charles Darwin, Mary Anning, these kind of people, like really, really kind of huge names from the 19th century. And there they are, you know, in front of you, sitting in boxes or sitting in cabinets, you know, and it's, that's pretty interesting. And also just working in the museum, in the building, you know, it was for me, it was fantastic because, you know, you walk in and every day and you walk through the galleries and you pass, like, you know, dinosaur skeletons and just unbelievable objects that are just, you know, that's what you see every morning, you know, the way in and up the stairs to the office, you know, and that's pretty incredible as well.
Well, it sounds, yeah, there are some of these places in the UK that are pretty old fashioned in terms of like what they have, the museums and, like, you know, stuffed animals and things like that. And it can get interesting when you're working there. But well, you've told us a little bit about, you know, how you came to choose that, which perhaps at first you weren't quite sure, but then you got to understand what it meant and all this. Obviously, then you've had experience in many fields. So if somebody wanted to do the same as you, what advice would you give them? Is there something that now you realize that you could have done differently or you would have liked to know at the beginning?
I suppose advice, I mean, the one thing that I did do, and I would recommend everybody do it if they can, is go to art school or go to a university and study it, because, you know, I've often heard a lot of, especially older designers, kind of say, you know, oh, I taught myself, or I got a job with a you know, print house, and I learned everything I needed to learn there, and, you know, there's no need to go to university. And, you know, maybe there is some truth in that, but I mean, the way I look at it is, like, for me, going and doing my degree was really transformative, you know, because you surround yourself with other people that are all there of their own volition, you know, they're all there to, they're creative people in really different ways and different ways of thinking, and you're just immersed in a kind of an environment like that. It has to inspire you, you know. If you're already creative, then it's just an amazing atmosphere to be in, you know. And, you know, that's not even talking about the actual learning, you know. Then in the actual learning and in the coursework, you know, hopefully you will have some good lecturers and they will point out things to you that, you know, I was there when I was like 18, 19. I mean, I couldn't possibly have known about, you know, and so much stuff was kind of shown to me. And maybe I would have come across it later, you know, by myself, but, you know, who knows how long that would have taken. So, I mean, I think going to university was like really, really good thing to do. Another thing I would say is, you know, kind of understand if you're going want to go into graphic design, like understand graphic design. So, yeah, read about it, get as many books as you can, read about the history of design, read about different movements in design, because I feel that if I can kind of locate myself in this kind of continuum of the practice of design, then it's more enriching for me. You know, it's more, I get a sense of like what I'm doing, like when I do like book layout design, it's not so far away from, you know, a medieval scribe, you know, laying out pages of the Book of Kells, you know, or Lindisfarne Gospels. You know, it's, you're essentially doing the same thing. You're like measuring out margins, you're deciding on the space between lines, how the letters should appear, you know, everything is, it's really, really similar, you know, and that for me is very enriching experience or thought. And understanding about, like, you know, 19th century advertising, 20th century advertising, how that influenced so much and kind of created the modern field of graphic design. I mean, it's, these are good things to know, and it just makes your everyday work more interesting, you know. And also the idea that design is, you know, it's another art. And I know some people don't like talking about design as art, but I think it's art in that it's an applied art, in the same way that architecture is art, or creating stained glass windows, you know, is art. You know, it's, you're doing it for a purpose or for a client, but you're also putting your own decision making into it and your own creativity into it, you know. And so locating yourself in kind of the greater cultural landscape, you know, whether it's, you know, you can connect design to music, to architecture, to all sorts of things, you know, to writing, and they're all interrelate in different ways. And then, like, I suppose other, like, more practical steps is, I mean, obviously getting experience. So, but again, experience in different fields. Like, even if you want to go into graphic design, I didn't do this, but it's something that I would do if I was starting again, is maybe, you know, ask for some experience in areas like, I don't know, like, maybe a wayfinding design studio, or even architecture. I mean, especially, like, you won't be useful to them, but if they're generous, they'll be useful to you, and they'll understand that you're there to kind of get a handle on different fields and try and kind of find your what appeals to you, you know. And what else? I mean, I suppose also creating things. So, you know, if you might not have any clients when you're starting out, but, you know, make your own projects. I mean, create, I don't know how popular they are anymore, but like fanzines, and, or, you know, if you're into app designs, build yourself an app, you know, it won't be perfect, but it's your thing, and it's what, at that moment in time, what you think is useful or valuable or beautiful. And, you know, making things, make logos logos for fictitious companies or institutions, or create make-believe shops, you know, designing the interior of you know, whatever it is, just like making stuff, because, you know, you can put it into your portfolio, but you can also, but it's also, you're learning all the time. As you're doing it, you're learning it, because you're coming up against little problems that you have to kind of sort out and work out. And so I think that's really, really, really good thing to do. And if you're sure that graphic design is your area that you want to get into, I think, like, really focusing on typography and on typefaces, I think that's what makes good design and bad design, you know? I mean, it's the backbone of graphic design. So getting to grips with and getting familiar with typography is incredibly important, you know, and it's easy because it's everywhere, you know. Everywhere you look, there's graphic design and there's typography. When you walk in the street, you're just bombarded by it. It's everywhere. It's on your phone, you know, it's on a magazine you pick up. It's very easy to kind of start to notice it and get a feel for it and make opinions about it, even if there are opinions that, you know, other people don't agree with. Like, how, you know, just getting familiar with it is really important.
I really like the last part there about typography. You are so right. It is everywhere in our popular culture. SNL had this whole thing with Comic Sans, you know, that was used in the Avatar poster. You know, there was a skit about that. And Joseph Roth, who's a writer, both myself and Maria like, he wrote in Berlin in the 1920s. And he was making fun of the Nazis, essentially, because he saw their signs and their pamphlets. And he made fun of their typography and their, you know, their fonts and their artistic leanings as a way to kind of poke fun at them as well. So it's something that we take for granted, but is actually so fundamental to to the stories, our stories, and other companies and political parties and movies and everything. It's all so interconnected. Wayne, we could ask you so many questions. You're a font of knowledge. You're interesting to listen to, as many Irish people are. So, but for this moment, we'll say thank you so much for being here. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. Thanks so much for having me.